Joe presents From the Corner, brought to you by The Zone.
Hello, fight fans, and welcome to From the Corner, the show that has all other boxing shows on the ropes with me, Swazi McCallie.
And me, David Alorca. This week we have a triple threat of guests joining us. So let's go ahead and meet them.
Indeed, in the red corner, we have a UFC legend turned beloved fight commentator.
And in the blue corner, we have a duo of fighting experts, presenters, and of course, members of the DAZN family. Give it up for Dan Hardy and the Fight Disciple!
We are so excited to get into this chat, but before we get into it with our guests, let's take a look at what we've got in store for your viewing pleasure.
We'll be looking forward to some of the juicy action coming up this weekend in the world of boxing, including the blockbuster clash between Kell Brook and Amir Khan.
We'll also be picking the brains of some of our favourite boxers to get a glimpse into the inner psyche of a fighter.
Plus, we'll be putting our guests' boxing knowledge to the test in our new game, Ring Talk.
All of that is coming your way, and we'll be digesting the crazy action from last Saturday's big fight night on DAZN. So let's get into it. Let's do it, guys. Thank you for coming through to the show. How you doing?
I'm all right. I've just got one cheek on. Just letting you know.
That's all you need.
Just letting you know. Okay. Just in case I fall off.
The wind blows in the direction
of God. Yeah, for real. Well, first of all, I've got to know, Fight Disciples, how did you guys come up with the name?
You created it, actually.
Yeah.
Go on.
What's the story?
Well, we got a bucket of beers in a bar, didn't we? And we, by the time we got to the bottom of the bucket of beers, we registered the name. We'd come up with it because it was all about... addicted to fight sports. We knew it had to be fight something. And then we thought, disciples are kind of tied in.
So trying to create a following, aren't we, man?
Yeah, that's
what we're trying to create. A holy following. That's what we're trying to create.
It's everyone's a exactly. Fight disciple. You follow the Fight Disciples, you are a Fight Disciple.
Nice.
Now, Dan, obviously, being an MMA fighter, you're skilled in the art of inflicting pain. But how much is boxing a part of that?
Oh, it's a huge part of it. My Saturday morning sessions back in the day, every training camp was a boxing session. I was training alongside high-level boxers, good amateurs, good pros. I was training alongside the likes of Carl Froch and stuff, just trying to learn a few things, a bit of transfer of power from the big man and, see what I can implement into mixed martial arts. There are a few differences, but there's a lot of crossover as well.
A huge amount of crossover there. Now, obviously, Adam, you've covered like a wide array of different sports during your career. It seems like you've settled your home now in combat sports. Why? What made you settle here?
Because table tennis said no. Table tennis didn't want him.
No, I think I've always been a fan, but I've always been fascinated by the athletes. I think that's the first and foremost thing.
Yeah.
The mad people, let's be honest. This dude's got a chemical imbalance. Yeah. You know what I mean? True. How can you sign a contract like 12 weeks out from something, knowing full well that you're going to have a scrap in 12 weeks, and then you're going to shut a door... cage door in front of 20,000 people with the millions of people around the world watching you have a scrap with another geezer. That I find the mentality of it incredibly fascinating, and that's it. The thing that has gravitated me towards the sport is the people that obviously participate in it.
And for yourself, is there anyone that you think, I'd love to cover that fight, where you would just lose your mind? You think, I'm actually here to do a job, but I'm enjoying it too much.
Honestly, I'm kind of spoiled for choice. As these guys have already said, there are so many talented fighters, across boxing and mixed martial arts right now. It's kind of difficult to pick one out. The ones that are improving so fast, Kamaru Usman, for me, right now, is leading the way in mixed martial arts. And what's best about it is that he's such a strong wrestler, but the thing that's winning him his fights most recently is his hands. He's knocking people out cold, and with a jab as well. Drop Gilbert Burns with a jab. To see these big developments in people's games who are already got a really strong skill set and they start adding to it. Francis Ngannou with his wrestling game in the last fight as well. These are the kind of things I like to see.
Absolutely, and touched on Francis Ngannou and potential fights that people would like to see. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about...
Don't you dare.
You know what I mean? Come on,
Listen,
I am going to bring this up. Early doors, you know what I'm saying? The Gypsy King, Tyson Fury, Francis Ngannou. Is that something you'd like to see? And how do you see that playing out?
I honestly think it's a horrible fight for Ngannou. There's such a massive gap in the skill sets. And Ngannou's working really, really hard on his wrestling. If it's an MMA fight, that's interesting, because I would still say the Gypsy King's got a good chance of beating him in mixed martial arts. I just feel like he's a natural-born fighter. He's been in the fight game since he was a kid. You speak to his dad, you can imagine that he's never been able to get away from combat sports. So I think the pedigree that he's got would transfer to mixed martial arts quite well. And Ngannou's a very raw striker. You put a pair of big gloves on him and you put him in there with the Gypsy King, and he's going to miss a lot of the shots that he takes.
Exactly.
In mixed martial arts, it changes things because the gloves are smaller and he can clinch and wrestle. But I think Tyson Fury being mean in mixed martial arts as well.
Isn't that more scary to have someone who can cross over to both sports?
I think it is. You know, I think, you know, we can look back through boxing and we can pick out a few guys that would have been really good. Of course, Mike Tyson would have been an absolute animal in mixed martial arts. Sometimes you spot someone who's got a real fighting instinct. Another one, Golovkin. You know, the way he pushes forward. Julio Cesar Chavez, another one of my favourites. Their style is very kind of oppressive and push forward. And I think that's what transfers over well to MMA.
Now, obviously, Adam and Nick, you guys have been lucky enough to be ringside at some incredible boxing and MMA fights. Luckily enough to have joined you as well on a few of those. What fight for either of you, in fact, I'll ask this for all of you actually, has been your special one?
I'm in a lucky position that I can say that I was at all three of the Fury Wilder fights. So I've done all three of those. So as a trilogy, as a collective, that's a belter. I think the first major one that really sticks out in my mind is the night at Wembley where Anthony Joshua ended up beating Vladimir Klitschko. I mean, just 90,000 people in an arena where it's Anthony's proper first test and he comes through after being on his backside. That was just something really special. So from a boxing point of view, those two. And I know this is cliche, mate, but any Conor McGregor night.
Yeah, exactly.
Any Conor McGregor night is just mad in the world of MMA. It's just tremendous. The atmosphere to be around that for the ring war with a Foggy Dew playing, it's just a different level.
Yeah, I think Conor right now, I look back at his fights, the one with Habib especially, the atmosphere was unbelievable. I think we were in the Gods doing live commentary for that one. It was absolutely insane. The whole of fight week was mental. And then over in boxing, very similar. You know, I covered all of Prince Nazim's career, so I was at all of Naz's fights as well, and his ring walks and everything that went with it. Similar to Conor, you feel like it's like a once-in-a-generation athlete. Mm. And in those moments, you kind of pinch yourself and go, wow, I'm blessed to be at this, on this journey with him, chronicling this journey with him. So yeah, I would say any Naz fight or any Conor fight, probably.
I've only ever called one boxing match, but fortunately, that was Mayweather and McGregor. So to be ringside for that was incredible as well. And the atmosphere in there, people just really didn't know what to expect. All-time fights, though, has to be Bisping Silver in
London.
I've still got a shirt that's covered in blood from Bisping's face. It was the wildest atmosphere. Because, you know, especially after he got dropped by that knee and everyone thought the fight was over, Silver was celebrating, and then Bisping does what he does, shows his toughness and claws his way back to win the decision. What a fight to be ringside for that one.
That was one of those nights where you get back to the hotel and you haven't even got the energy to go and have a drink or relax or whatever. You just collapse on your bed.
You're lying.
You know me, a little one.
I love how we're always getting the proof of you. Which story is true?
We can't lie with Dave. Dave knows.
Exactly. Now, coming outside of the ring, you guys have spoken to so many people, but has there been anyone you've been quite nervous to talk to in an interview?
Yeah, Mike Tyson.
You really? Yeah, come on.
I interviewed Mike Tyson twice, once in a lift in Manchester. And once
in a lift.
In a lift.
So
in
you roll up to Zoom.
Literally. So there was a media day going on. You couldn't get anywhere near him. And I just thought, right, how am I going to get a one-on-one with Mike? And I knew he was going back to his suite. So I literally had my Zoom recorder stood by the lift. And as he walked towards the lift like a bellman, I just pressed the button. As he walked in, I followed him in. And then I knew I had him then captivated in that lift during the journey, pressing every button. So yeah, that moment, because there was just so much involved, and it was Mike Tyson, man. It was, you know. And then I spoke to him again in California a few years later when I was covering UFC more. So yeah, I'd go with Tyson.
I think you're right in what you're saying there. I think all mine are probably from a nostalgic point of view. In the modern day, no, because it's your job, isn't it? That's what you're doing, and you're interviewing these athletes because you're covering them. But when you're speaking to somebody that made you feel certain feelings when you were a kid, i.e. Naz, you mentioned Naz before. I remember the first time that I interviewed Naz, it was like, I'm interviewing Naz, man. You know what I mean? All I want to do is hang out and just have a laugh, but you've actually got to do the job. So yeah, all the ones from my childhood that are now legends of the game are the ones that you get a little bit of a tingle about.
Yeah.
But Dan, speaking about interviewing different people, from being inside the octagon, now you are hugely and highly regarded as a great commentator, firstly for the UFC and also now BT Sport. I see that little smile coming in your face there. But not every ex-fighter makes a great talker. So who was your kind of inspiration and who helped you up through that?
Honestly, it was very much accidental. You know, I was coming to a point in my career where I didn't know whether I'd be able to continue fighting or not due to health reasons. And I was a bit lost. I spent a sort of 6 months kind of drifting and not exactly sure what I was going to do. And it was Lorenzo and Dana that gave me the opportunity. And I don't know whether they just saw my potential because I did every interview they threw at me and I always had too much to say for myself. But they put me in that position and I kind of learned on the job. It's an interesting craft. I don't think anything really prepares you for these kind of jobs. You know, you have to love it and you have to immerse yourself in it. Unfortunately, I'm a bit obsessive about these things. So, you know, when it comes to researching fights, I can do that all day, every day.
Well, that's what we want, though, isn't it? Because yeah. Then you're going to be top of the game. I heard that Joe Rogan's also a massive inspiration for you.
Massive, yeah, of course. You know, Joe Rogan's voice was iconic, especially coming through. You know, while I was fighting, I could hear him commentating at the octagon side. And we've learned so much from Joe Rogan, not only about being broadcasters and commentators, but also about being fans. Mm. You know, you won't find a bigger fan than Joe Rogan side of the octagon. And that comes through in his commentary. That's why people love him so much. You hear that, oh, and it's iconic. And then everybody's, you know, you've got your goosebumps and everyone's on their feet. It just, it adds to the experience for me. And Joe Rogan's iconic when it comes to the UFC.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting individual, Joe Rogan. I've had the fortunate enough to be on his podcast as well as trained with him for many years as well. He's a great athlete and a great individual, and he's just he loves everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got nothing against anybody, Joe Rogan.
Yeah. I hope he's watching.
Yeah.
Now let's turn our attention to this week's action, and this weekend sees a war that's been a long time in the making.
Sure is. That's right. Amir Khan and Kell Brook will face off in Manchester in a bid to settle a rivalry that stretches all the way back to their amateur days.
Adam, Nick, how excited are you guys to finally see this fight happening? Do you know what it is, right? As the days, you know, go by, right? You're sitting there thinking, is it actually going to happen?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I'll believe it when they bring war.
It feels like that. It feels like you're drunk a little bit. You know what I mean? Yeah. It feels like that hazy situation as to, oh, is this a real thing? Because we've been speaking about it for 10 years.
Mm. Yeah.
It's been going on for such a long, long period of time. But now it is here. We are in fight week. These guys are in a very similar place in their lives, very similar place professionally. And the question is, who's got what left? It's an absolute crack. And they hate each other, man. We love fights where people hate each other and they're going at each other and what have you. They're the best fights.
Well, Kel absolutely hates Amir. I don't know whether Amir hates Kel as much as...
He will do when he whacks him in the mouth.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But yeah, chocolate brownies.
For me, that's the big issue going in. I'm like, why is Kel taking this so personally? You know, he accepts the fact that Amir's had a more successful career, that Amir's conquered America, which few British fighters ever do. I think Amir Khan doesn't get the love he deserves from British fight fans.
That's fair.
His career has been absolutely instrumental, not only unlocking our Olympic program with his silver medal out in at the Olympics 2004, I think it was, but he conquered America. He's become a pay-per-view star all over the world. Mm. But people like to say, oh, he's chinny though, as he's got no chin. Come on, man, look at his record. Like, how many people has he dusted as well? How fast are his hands? How good are his feet? He's been everywhere. He's been a fantastic role model for British boxing. I just don't think he gets that love. And then Kel, for me, has just been jealous of his career. And he's let that manifest into this, like, green-eyed envy inside him. And yeah. I'm like, every time I see the interview, I'm like, Kel, chill, man. Calm down. You're going to fight him. You're going to make your money.
Listen, Babby, he's getting it. Chocolate brownies, right? He's getting it. I've been sugaring these bad boys up and he's going to get it right down there. Kardashian's getting it that night. I'm telling you.
Rent-free.
That's for you, Kel.
Amir lives rent-free in Kel's head.
Does that make him more of the fighter, though? But why doesn't he get the love? What's Brits got against him?
I think people see knockouts and they echo in their subconscious, don't they? You know, I think one bad performance, one bad knockout can just ring around a fight fan's head because they don't watch the depth of their career and all the guys that they fought on the way up and all the great performance they had. They remember that one fight where they saw them get dropped and then that tints everything that they see them in the future. Yeah.
He was a young guy who up sticks, went to America, he's living a very flashy lifestyle, he's got the nice watches, the nice cars and all that type of stuff, and that kind of rubs people up the wrong way. But like I said, the body of work, you look at the guys that he's been in the ring with, some serious talent there, and he's won the majority of them. Yeah. Okay, everybody remembers, oh, Canelo knocked him out. Canelo knocks everybody out, man.
Exactly. And he was multiple weights above where he should have been.
That was a middleweight, he should never have fought him, should never have been in there, exactly. But he took the challenge on, you know? Mm-hmm. So I hope that when the dust settles on Amir Khan's career, he does get the love because he certainly deserves it.
When there's so much bad blood between fighters, how much can that affect the fight?
I think it plays in a lot, especially because Kell Brook's got to be patient in this fight.
Yeah.
If he's too overzealous, if he starts being reckless, he's going to be paying for it because Amir Khan's so quick. He's got such a stinging jab. And you need to have your wits about you when you're fighting someone that's a fast technician.
Yeah.
You know, Kell would do well just to hang back and allow Amir Khan to come to him a little bit, work out the tight defence and try and counter him with big punches as he comes in. you need to be calm mentally to do that. You know, if you're riled, you might go looking for a fight. Then that's not going to work out well for him. I am fascinated. These guys are, you know, not past their prime. You know, there's a genuine beef between the two guys. And something maybe we've learned from mixed martial arts. You know, when Nate Diaz is doing the walk, no one cares. He hasn't got a belt around his waist. They want to watch him fight.
Cult hero.
If the needle between the two guys is real, everyone's going to tune
and
in.
And if
regardless.
It's even.
They could put them on hockey skates and put them on ice. People will still watch it. They will, you know, they will.
Just let them
beat
someone
else. Here we go. That's the rematch sorted out. Let's get that contract drawn up.
Oh, my days. All right, listen. Also, this weekend is the highly anticipated clash between middleweight sensations Jaime Munguia and Demetrius Ballard, which will be going down live on the zone, and it's set to be a belter.
Munguia has a record of 38 wins from 38 fights, and 30 of those are knockouts. So, what do you guys think about this one?
I like it. I like it as a fight because, listen, someone's always got to go, isn't it? Mm. Whenever that happens, there's no blueprint to beat either guy. You always know you're going to get a real fight. I think I'd obviously side with Munguia as a former world champion that's moving up, but this is a guy that was a world champion in the weight division below, moved up to middleweight 2.5 years ago. As WBO champion, you can activate your challenger clause. So if you come up as a champion to a new weight division, you can say, I was the champ down there. I want to fight for the belt. And he hasn't done that. And we're 2.5 years into his run at middleweight now. Why has he not done that? What is he waiting for? You know, he's got this opportunity to become a middleweight champion. But he's kind of skating around the title opportunity. I want a definitive performance from Munguia this weekend and really put a line in the sand and go, right, bring me the belt now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, Ballard's the underdog here. Do you think he has a... more than a puncher's chance in winning this.
Listen, I think anyone that's got an undefeated record and has got to this level is there on merit. Obviously, he's going into the Lions Den by going into Tijuana because, you know, that's going to be fever pitch in there. But what boxing the shoulders over the last few months, especially on the zone, is that don't count out the other guy.
Yeah,
you know
for
what
sure.
I mean? We've had some huge upsets in 2021, and you know all Munguia needs to do is watch some tape of the likes of Kid Galahad getting iced out by a 65-year-old Spaniard to know that take nobody lightly. So yeah, of course. Listen, Ballard's a live dog in the fight. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Just picking up on what you said about don't count out the other guy. If he's been dodging for 2 years, what other reason could it be other than he may be scared?
She went there. Oh dear.
Listen, Andrade, there's mystery around Demetrius Andrade, isn't
there?
And a lot of people in America big him up to be this superstar, the next generation of the Mayweathers and what have you. And that might be the case, but I think he's still unproven. So Munguia not taking that fight, you're right, it does create questions as to why he didn't end up taking that fight. It's coincidental that Andrade's now moving up, so maybe he's going to move into that situation. I don't think Munguia is scared. I just think that he's obviously connected to Golden Boy and he's their prize asset. And this is the thing that annoys me a little bit about
boxing.
They're
stealing them, aren't they?
Where you're navigating, rather than just best versus the best. Exactly. Let's just create the great fights, man.
Yeah.
People navigate the way to particular narratives, which I think is what has happened here. But hopefully, after this... they will chuck him in.
Listen, I sold it there on the O has got to go. But in fact, that whole phrase, the O, you know, someone's always got it. We need to stop talking about that in boxing, actually, because we put too much emphasis on undefeated fighters' records. Dan, I'll tell you, in MMA, we say if you're undefeated, you're fighting the wrong guys. That's just the way it is, because you should be learning your skill set. If you're not pushing yourself, how are you ever getting better? How are you going to realise your true potential? So I think we need to get away from these undefeated records, and I think that's what Golden Boy have done with Munguia. They've kind of steered them to keep him undefeated. But come on, man, throw him in there. He's ready now. He's a former world champion.
Need to change,
of course.
Towards it as
someone
well.
Loses, you can't write them off.
Yeah.
Listen, he lost. It was a tough fight. Great. Israel Adesanya stepped up to light heavyweight in the UFC.
Yeah.
He lost and he went, okay, he's still the best middleweight in the world. Come on back. And he's proven he is.
Right, guys, it's time for a little game. And this week we've recruited the help of the incredible impressionist Al Foran to bring us a special boxing quiz.
That's right. Dan and the Fight Disciples are going to be asking questions which they will attempt to answer together as a team. And the voices asking the questions might sound a tiny bit familiar.
Let's play Ring Talk.
Are you ready?
Absolutely.
We'll have a go.
Let's have question number one.
Yeah, I've fought my way to the very top of women's boxing, you know. A professional record of 20 fights and 20 wins, so very proud of that. You know, but before I turned professional, you know, I won an Olympic gold medal and, you know, it was an amazing achievement. But can you tell me which Olympic Games that was at? Cheers, thanks a million.
Right. You're going to have to tell me the question, right? That was just, I was laughing.
You lost.
Yeah, I lost it. I got the last bit, but I don't know what the first bit of the thing was.
Well, obviously, that was the brave bomber, Katie Taylor, yes, asking you which Olympics she competed in.
Just competed in general.
You were there. You commed on it.
Yeah, but she's competed in two. Whereas, is he referring to the one where she won a gold medal or not won a gold medal?
Oh, that is what she is referring to.
She? Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, Al. Yeah. Won 2012.
Yes.
Didn't win 2016. Mm-hmm. So that's the answer. I'll go with 2012 as the. If he's talking about the win, it's the 2012 win.
All right. That's what we're all going for, yeah?
We agree that Adam's probably going to be wrong.
Oh, yeah. He was there. So if he's going to get it wrong,
you can't get it wrong now, Adam.
Look in his face.
The kid.
All right. Let's see if it is the correct answer.
Yeah, the answer is actually the London Olympic Games in 2012. You know, it was an incredible achievement and, you know, I'm so proud of it. But, you know, I think beating Amanda Serrano in April will be an even bigger achievement in Madison Square Garden. So, yeah, please God it happens and, you know, it'll be absolutely incredible. Yeah.
What substance is he on?
Why did he comb the wig?
Hey, tell you.
Done Katie no favours there.
Yeah, he
definitely needs a PED test, let me tell you. Something going on.
Somebody get part of that now.
Congratulations, well done, you did get it right.
Okay, let's have question number two.
Can't believe I'm doing this stupid thing. Whatever. What, we're live? Okay. As you may or may not know, me and my brother Nick are both professional fighters at the UFC. We're also famous brother pairing in boxing of Klitschko, Vladimir Vitali. So the question is, true or false, did they both make their debut on the same night in 1996? So, true or false?
Obviously, Nate Diaz.
That's what he said.
That's why it's accurate. That's why it's accurate.
So accurate.
Obviously, Nate Diaz there wanted to know if the Klitschko brothers made their debut on the same night. True or false?
Well, that's a question for the fight this
time. I don't think that's true.
I can't see that being true because Vitali was so far ahead of Vladimir.
Yeah. It's not, I don't think that's true. No. I would say that it's not true.
Well, is there a hint given the fact that it's a Diaz brother and they never fight on the same card?
Correct. That sounds good as well. That sounds good. Listen.
Hey, I don't think he's thought that too far.
Yeah, just the impression. Good point.
Yeah.
Just because of the career trajectory, I can't see that being true.
I'd agree with you, mate. I would say false.
Yeah. You're going false, yeah? All right, we're locking that one in.
Hang on, Dave. You just got that.
It's too late. Let's see what Nate's got to say.
It's true. You know, despite, you know, Vitali being 5 years older than Vladimir, they both made the debut, same night, 1996. You know, so, both early knockouts, so, legends of the game.
They should sign him and send him to press conferences.
Brilliant.
All right, one for one then, so let's bring on question number three.
Everyone's well aware that we have some serious cash in the banks, and I want a man. Well, listen, my opponent, Floyd Money Mayweather, he has a lot of cash in the banks, you know what I mean? I don't think he has as much as me, but he made a lot. Fair play to him. What I want to know is, how much money did Floyd make for every punch that he landed in the 2010s, right? Here's your options. A, $5 million. B, $500,000. C, $50,000. D, $5,000. Let us know.
Let us know. So, there are your options. I'll give you the question. How much money did Floyd make landing every punch in 2010? So, A, $5 million, B, $500,000, C, $50,000, or D, $5,000?
Right, it's not $5 million. No. For every punch he landed.
In 2010?
In 2010.
In 2010.
Oh, in that whole decade.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not $5
million. No.
It's not. It's lower, right?
It's got to be 50k because any lower than that would be too low, I think.
Do you think?
I think 500k, me.
500k? Half a million per punch?
Do you know how much he earned?
Do you know how many punches he bloody landed?
In 2010, he wasn't that active, though, in 2010s, not compared to the 2000s. How many fights did he have in 2010, in the 2010s?
Mm. Oh! There's a rumble on the sofa right now.
My gut would be what Dan said, 50.
And your gut would be what?
500.
So where are we going?
Okay.
I don't want to fight
We don't agree on anything. That's why it's good.
All right. That's why it's solid content.
Okay,
go on. I don't want two Christmases. You've got to agree on this.
No divorces here.
You want to go half a million?
I'm going to go
per punch.
500k per punch.
I just want to say you guys are two for two so far. This is the question.
But how many times did he fight? Twice?
No.
No, we have more fights than that. But
into...
Economical sum of money.
Yeah, he's gross what? 100 million? 120 million?
More than that, he's gross that for Connor. Wait. One fight.
Yeah. Go on then. Go on then.
Go on then. Go on, then.
What are we locking in?
Go on, no.
I'm going to go with 500k per punch in 2010s.
Okay, 500k is locked in. Please, can we get the answer?
No way. Floyd made half a million for every punch that he landed in the 2000 events. Half a million for one smack. Fair play, Floyd. Well done to you. We made a lot of money from your pal, though, as well.
Very good. Well done. Well done, guys. You got 2 out of 3. How do you feel?
Disappointed that we got one wrong.
I wanted a clean sweep.
Yeah, I did.
I wanted a clean sweep.
I'm here for unanimous. We don't do split decisions.
Now, everyone knows that athletes can be superstitious types, so we caught up with some of our favourite fighters and asked them to reveal their pre-fight rituals and post-fight celebrations.
Let's take a trip into the mind of a fighter.
I have to get my nails done every fight week. Go get my nails done so they're fresh, even though you can't see them.
If you're in the red or blue corner, I had to have red bandages if I was in the red corner.
I wear my EURFC rugby socks.
Tight pair of shorts, so I would just like try and keep... wear the same ones, like I won in them, so I'll wear them again.
I've learned that doesn't matter what colour of bandages or what colour of socks you have on you, it's entirely up to you once you step into those ropes.
I do a prayer before I go out to fight, just to recap everything and just why we're there and what we're there to do.
And doing that final prayer before we walk to the ring, I think that's a really important.
I want to see everyone who supported me from the beginning, all my family and all my friends. And after the last fight, I went into a little bar, they was all standing in, and I just like to see all the people that have inspired me, because their support is what inspires me to keep going as well.
We'll probably just be going straight back to hotel, just relaxing.
I love junk food.
I don't actually eat until 4 or 5 hours after because of the adrenaline.
A lovely Indian meal with the family.
Birthday cake waiting for me.
I think after this fight, we're going to have 10 Whoppers or 10 whatever, Big Macs, whatever it is. Just line it up and I'll eat it all.
I don't drink and I don't really like being... I don't do after parties.
Plan a vacation. I think that's necessary.
I just want to be by myself, to be honest, and eat McDonald's and chocolate.
Other brands are available, right? It's like... Dan, talk with me. Well, I mean, have you got any rituals during your fighting days?
Well, I used to draw a skull and crossbones on my wraps. So afterwards, when the commission come and signs your hand wraps off, I would always grab their Sharpie and draw a skull and crossbones on both hands. That was something that was a bit of a tradition for me. I did wrap a £5 note into my right hand once because I won it on the Grand National, and I'd never won a knockout with my right hand.
Because it was money, baby.
So I thought, I wrapped it. I've still got it in the wrap. £5 note that was in the wrap on the wrist, yeah. And I put him down with an overhand right. So it's
hey.
Yeah.
Come on. How impressed were you with his performance?
I thought the matchmaking was solid, actually. For this particular fight, Johnny's a raw novice, and he's getting opportunities that maybe shouldn't necessarily come his way, but it's not his fault because obviously he's got a massive following. So therefore, if you're his promoter and his TV channel, you're going to boost him up the card because you're aware that there's an audience there. But he's relatively young in his career, and I think the audience needs to be aware of that. And he came through some tough questions on Saturday night. He passed that test. I think it would be a little bit fairer on him if he was a little bit further down the card, so we can do that work in the darkness before we thrust him into the spotlight. But I think because he's got a following and because he's such a lovable character, he's going to do all right in this game, man. I don't know how far he's going to go. British champion, European champion, who knows? But it's going to be a bit of a fun ride because his fans are mad. They're absolutely mad at the Box of Frogs, aren't they? They were enjoying themselves at Ali Pali anyway, having a whale of a time.
The main card fight on Saturday was the intriguing clash between Daniel Jacobs and John Ryder. Let's take a look and see how it went down.
Ryder tries to get off, but taken on the gloves. signs of a rally from Jacobs in this round, but it finishes with a lovely right hand from Ryder.
It all started to work on the inside from Ryder. Good shot from Jacobs.
So Ryder can't get to work in the space that he wants to. Alexandra Palace and Jacobs on Gabe Rosales' scorecard pretty much only has to stand up to win, having taken the 10th and 11th rounds.
For your winner by split decision, from Islington, London, England, John the Gorilla Ryder!
I see a little wincing on your face there. And a little, it's there. You know, you saw Rosado's card there, had Danny Jacobs quite up. So was it an upset there? And where do you think that leaves Danny Jacobs?
I feel for him, man. I was very similar to what Gabe Rosado scored. I had Danny Jacobs winning that fight two, maybe even three rounds. And obviously, the judges saw it a different way. They gave a split decision.
Homer.
In
call it a homer.
Towards the home fighter. We seem to be talking about judging and scorecards in fight sports quite a lot. Obviously, even in the UFC at the weekend, we were talking about certain judges at UFC 271. And it's a concern. I think there needs to be better education in the world of boxing. There isn't a unified criteria that people are following. It's a lot of guesswork because you've got sanctioning bodies and governing bodies that have different criteria as on how to go about scoring a fight, which I think is confusing a lot of people. I think we need to sit down, very similar to the guys that do the work in MMA, like Mark Goddard, who have a universal criteria to train judges better, to score fights better, and therefore we'll all be on the same hymn sheet. I think that helps fans as well when they're sat at home to be able to understand what they're actually seeing. I think that part of it needs to be done. And I think we need better reactions to things like that. There's loads of reaction on social media. I'm sure loads of people have seen this, but the reaction in the aftermath of that fight where people are saying, well, John Ryder's been on the wrong end of some bad ones in the past, so he's owed this one. No, man, he's not owed anything. These incidents are separate incidents. Why don't we fix the judging situation so therefore we get more right decisions than we do wrong decisions, and trying to offset everything by saying, well, we had some wrong ones over here.
So this
one's okay as well. Two wrongs don't make a right. Yeah. Come on, let's get the judging sorted out, and then hopefully the sport can move forward. People at home can understand it better, and then more people actually come to think it's actually a decent sport, this. Because when you win a fight, you actually get your hand raised and you go home as the victor rather than going home as the loser, which Danny Jacobs sadly ended up doing at the weekend because I thought he won the fight.
Any other takes on
it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the same. I thought Jacobs started off really well. I mean, it seemed to me like Ryder's game plan was to use his physicality and close it down, you know, make Daniel Jacobs work in the clinch when he really doesn't want to. Because the thing is, if you give Jacobs that space, he's going to use his speed, he's going to use his stance switching, which is a problem for everybody. And he's gonna wear you down on the judges' scorecards. But it was like Ryder had tried to play the long game and start to wear him out a bit. And I think, to be honest, his game plan was working. It just didn't work over 12 rounds. I don't think he won enough rounds to take the decision. And I felt bad for Daniel Jacobs because he started well and then it just kind of slowly started to slip away from him from the seventh on.
Yeah.
Great fight, though. I really enjoyed it. And I'm a big fan of both fighters, but Daniel Jacobs was the better boxer.
It was a masterclass for six rounds for me, for Daniel Jacobs. And then it got to the point where Ryder was doing better, so now we're scoring rounds in his favour, but they weren't as one-sided as Jacobs had early on. And then I thought when it really mattered in the championship rounds, 11 and 12, I thought Jacobs done enough to at least win one of those rounds. So I too had it probably two up in favour of Jacobs. And you know, I would have liked there have been some more chat around the fact that, well, come on, it was a bit of a homer decision. It was a close fight. Let's not write off Danny Jacobs now and start talking about Ryder fighting Canelo next, which is pure fantasy. Let's do the rematch. Let's make sure that the right person won this fight, because I think a lot of the fans even probably came away from Ali Pally thinking, we've picked the pickpocket in there to get that result.
Yeah. Thank you so much to Dan and the Fight Disciples for coming through today.
Remember to find us on the Joe YouTube channel or wherever it is you get your podcasts. You've been listening to From the Corner, brought to you by Joe and The Zone. You've been listening to From the Corner, brought to you by Joe and The Zone.